Hello, everybody, and welcome to the WDW Main Street Podcast. This podcast is being brought to you by American Tourist Travel. For all your travel needs, contact American Tourist Travel at americantouristtravel.com. The show is also being brought to you by Elite Vacation Homes. If you need a home in the Central Florida area, Elite Vacation Homes is the place to go. They have homes from 2 to 6 bedrooms, they have pools, they have game rooms, and they have outside barbecues. So contact Elite Vacation Homes at elitevacationhomes.com. The show is also being brought to you by Scooter Vacations. If you need a scooter for Disney World, Universal, SeaWorld, contact Scooter Vacations at scootervacations.com. And our last sponsor is David's Vacation Club Rentals. If you need to rent a DVC hotel, if you want to stay at the Boardwalk, the Yacht and Beach Club, Animal Kingdom Lodge, Contemporary, contact David's at davidsvacationclubrentals.com. And now on with the show. Hello, everybody, and welcome to podcast number 151. I'm joined, as always, by my good buddy, Den. Hey, Den, pull up a stool.
Good morning, Doug. How are you today?
I'm doing well. We're also joined by our buddy, Bob, from All In WDW. Hey, Bob, pull up a stool.
Thanks, guys. I come bearing loaded margaritas today.
Yeah. Well, no shots on the tops of mine. These knuckleheads like to buy margaritas over at the Margarita Bar in Mexico, and then they put an extra shot of tequila on top, which they call a floater. Now, I'm not allowed to do that because I'm driving today. I have to take these two knuckleheads home after this show. So,
actually, for you, Doug, we got something different because we did experience this too. They got a bottomer or something where they put the floater in first. So it was on the bottom. We can do that for you, Doug.
Okay, so we're all staying here now. None of us are ever leaving. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
It's too late, Doug. I mean, yours already has the floater in it.
Oh, right. Thanks, guys.
That way you get that right out of the box when you take that first sip with the straw at the bottom. You get the floater right out of the way.
Open your eyes right off. So, guys, what we're going to do today is we have our friend Bob on from All In WDW. He does March Madness on his site. And he's down to – he just finished the Magic Kingdom, which produced all the winners from all four parks. So we're going to go over the results from the Magic Kingdom. And then what we're going to do is we're going to talk about the Sweet 16. Sound good to you, Bob?
Sounds great. Thanks for giving me the forum to do that. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome. We're glad to have you on. And then after that, we're going to talk about how these two knuckleheads ate their way around World Showcase at food – Bob calls it Food and Flower, which is Flower and Garden Festival. So you want to kick us? You want to kick us off at the Magic Kingdom?
Absolutely. So Doug, you mentioned this is a third annual year for All In WDW hosting this type of a competition. It's a little bit of a multi-day poll where we take the attractions and sometimes resorts, sometimes table services, etc., and we go through a Sweet 16, Elite 8, Final Four cut down over the course of 3 days to produce the All In WDW readers' favorite of that particular category. So, as you mentioned previously this year, we covered and accomplished naming a reader's favorite for Animal Kingdom, Hollywood Studios, and Epcot. And this week, the readers kindly participated in a wild week of voting to crown the Haunted Mansion as the two-time reader's favorite Disney's Magic Kingdom attraction.
Well, me and Dennis were both disappointed. We thought the Railroad and the TTA should have tied for the win, didn't we, Den?
I would have been good with that. Absolutely.
Me too. You could have been driving the TTA. I could have been going around the park and the railroad, and we'd have been happy. But no, the Wicked Ghost had a win this year again.
And you know, it's one of the things that I comment on today's post at allinwdw.com in my post game analysis is that it's amazing how the old classics, Haunted Mansion, Splash Mountain, TTA, all do well in these polls. I mean, in spite of the fact that there's new attractions in Magic Kingdom. And, you know, even when the three of us talked about the Epcot poll some weeks back, we speculated on what a new Frozen attraction would mean to that park's polls. And, you know, Doug, yourself, you rightly said that, you thought that, you know, it might not win over some of the, you know, old standbys. And, I think that, this week's poll proved that you're right. Seven Dwarfs, for instance, it had a, I would say, disappointing finish in eighth place, and
but the crazy
Little Mermaid,
part is the crazy part is Seven Dwarfs Mine Train is the hardest thing to get on in the park right now. So it goes to show you, just because it's the hardest thing to get on, don't mean it's the favorite.
Go ahead, Bob.
No, go ahead, Dennis.
I was going to say, just one of my theories on that too is, and you're right, Doug, it's a very popular attraction, probably across all four major theme parks. But we kind of lose sight of the fact that we go so often that we've been on it and have experienced it. I'll bet you there's people that, you know, are on the five-year plan or whatever, only get down there every fourth year, that haven't been on it, so they don't have that sentimental or emotional tie to it. So even though they know it's a new attraction, if they were taking the poll, they might go for something, a tried and true, you know, a classic, a Haunted Mansion or a Pirates of the Caribbean or something like that.
And I also think, too, and next year, Bob, before we do this, before you do your polls, we want to get you on earlier, maybe the month before, so we could start talking about how the polls are. Because I honestly believe a lot of people don't vote for what they want to vote for because they think it's a wasted vote. I don't think a lot of people vote honestly, because I even find myself going there. No, I look. No, seriously.
Are you being dishonest again, Doug?
No, but think about this. What I think happens is people go on the poll sometime and they see what the numbers are, so they don't want to waste a vote even though theirs isn't as high up as what it should be. So I think it skews sometimes. Does that make sense to you? Because there's, but I still vote for what I believe in. But when I go in there and it's a railroad, say Splash Mountain, Pirates and something else, and when Pirates has and Splash Mountain are neck and neck, some people I think feel obligated to vote for one of those two instead of voting for what they really believe in. Does that make sense to you guys?
It's possible that you know, the readers could be doing a little bit of that. I think it's going to end up being a little bit of a mix. I mean, you know, I've talked to some of the readers or interacted with them on Twitter, Facebook, or by email, and they've said that, well, geez, I didn't like anybody in this group. I don't like any of those rides. And what I'll encourage them to do is, all right, well, then if you, you know, don't have a personal favorite from this group of four, then which one do you think is most deserving of winning that group?
And or if you had a ride, one of those four, pick that one then. If you were stuck, it was the last ride on Earth, and you had to ride one of them, pick that one.
That's kind of what I encourage them to do, because, you know, some people will go, they'll look at a group, and you can tell that in the final vote totals for each different group of four. If you look on the site, it'll show the total number of votes. And there, you know, if I run four groupings of four in a, Sweet 16, very rarely are the vote totals in each and every group the same. And what that tells me is somebody declined to vote in a particular group because they didn't like the attractions, or because, like you just described, you know, Haunted Mansion has such a big lead that it just doesn't make sense to vote in their eyes. I mean, yeah, to be honest with you, we ran this finale between Mansion and the rest of the competitors, Splash Mountain, Big Thunder, and Pirates on Friday. And I even comment in my post today that I could tell Mansion was going to run away with it by lunch on Friday. So as I sat there at work having my sandwich, I started drafting the victory post, basically calling the winner, as it were, you know, well in advance of everything being done. And they won by 17 votes in that finale vote. And honestly, what you guys don't necessarily see in the background is I track the votes all through the competition. And you know, when all was said and done through Friday's voting, Haunted Mansion had a 66 vote lead over the second place competitor. I mean, it was just a complete runaway, a demolition.
So read off the top five finishers at the Magic Kingdom.
Okay, so the top five finishers were Haunted Mansion by a wide margin, Splash Mountain, Big Thunder, Pirates of the Caribbean, and TTA.
Okay. What would your five be, Dan? If you had to rate them five, how would you have put them?
Oh, boy. Overall, number one for me, and I voted this way right through the poll all 4 days. 3 days, I guess, because TTA wasn't at the end. But it would definitely go TTA, Big Thunder Mountain, Pirates of the Caribbean, Haunted Mansion, and I even had Mickey's PhilharMagic in there on mine. Okay. Early on in the voting. It obviously didn't last very long.
No, if I had to do the five out of the five remaining that were in the top five, my number one would be Splash, and then it would be TTA, Haunted Mansion, Pirates, and then Big Thunder Mountain Railroad would be my five. But it's crazy how, the thing is, I don't even think those five would be totally me and Dennis's five because the railroad would be up there for mine.
And we didn't mention, Seven Dwarfs Mine Train, which is mind blowing.
Yeah.
And I'll add to that as well, because I echo what you just said, Doug. I mean, the top five in the list probably wouldn't be my top five either. Haunted Mansion and Pirates for sure would be there. The one big surprise for me this year, as far as an attraction that fell,
Carousel
was
Progress.
No, actually, Wishes was third of the entire poll. It finished third in 2014. It dropped all the way down to seven this year. It's interesting to speculate what might be in that. It might be just the way the groupings fell, because I do try to seed these based on what votes they received the previous round, and sometimes an attraction might get paired up against something that's really strong, like a Haunted Mansion or a Splash Mountain in this poll's case, and just not get as many votes as it would have the previous year. But Wishes would probably be up there with Haunted Mansion, Pirates, Jungle Cruise, and actually Tiki Room, from my perspective.
Okay. Yeah, see, Carousel would always be up in the top, five or six for me, just because I go by what I have to do every single trip. And if Carousel's not closed, I have to go on it, because that's like a must-do. And the other one I think that gets robbed a lot, too, is, and I tell Dennis this all the time, and you guys know how I am, the Hall of Presidents. I think that gets kicked to the curb way too fast, too.
And that'll be the same as what we discussed when we talked about Epcot and American Adventure. This past Christmas time, went on and experienced Hall of Presidents again for the first time in a number of years. And actually, Hall of Presidents was, didn't even make it out of the first round. It was like fourth from the bottom in finishing. Carousel of Progress finished 14th. So
it's sad. And the thing of it is if it wasn't for those two rides, most of it wouldn't exist. I mean, because the animatronics in both of them were what created everything else. It's where it all began, basically, with those rides.
Yeah, no, I agree. A lot of it is, it was the base for what was to come with some of the stuff we have now. And I think just thinking about it too, Doug, depending on what frame of mind you are when you take the poll, like if you're thinking about, what attraction puts a smile on my face or gives me a thrill when I go on it, let's just say, or something like that. Or if you're looking at it from the perspective, what's going to educate me, or what's going to make me feel proud of my country or proud of something. You know what I mean? You can almost take the poll with a different mindset and come up with a different answer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it just me being me, I want the older rides in some ways to get a little more respect, the respect that they deserve, in my opinion.
No, good point.
And you can make an argument here that where some of them didn't, like a Hall of Presidents or a Carousel, a lot of them did, because you have in the top four of the attractions that have been around the longest with Mansion, Splash Mountain, and Pirates. I mean, if we go a little bit deeper into the, you know, top 15, Tomorrowland Transit Authority is 5, Space Mountain 6, Wishes is 7th. It's 8th place before you find Seven Dwarfs, a new attraction. And then you get Peter Pan, PhilharMagic, well, Jungle Cruise. I mean, so you can go on and on. I mean, it's definitely...
I'm sorry, Bob, but the crazy thing is I'm surprised how far Space Mountain finished down this time.
You know, for us, it's never going to be in the top four.
Me neither.
It just seems... It beats me up too much.
I feel like I fought Mike Tyson after I get off that ride.
I agree. I 100% agree. I mean, my wife has had, you know, a little bit of a scary experience on Space Mountain. And frankly, ever since that occurrence, I haven't gone on even by myself. So, you know, it's a great attraction. For someone that loves roller coasters, that's new to the park, I'd certainly encourage them to try it, but it just wouldn't make the top of our list. It's not a must do.
I'm white knuckled the entire time I'm on it. It's like going through Washington at rush hour on the Beltway. I'm just holding on and like for dear life. I've done it many a times, but it's more like me testing myself every time I go on that ride.
And
like,
of course,
don't make me sick or whatever, but I'm like tense the entire time.
And of course, you got to keep ducking your head because you know you're going to hit one of those rails or tracks going overhead at some point.
And then if you followed my wife on it, like she has, my wife's beautiful woman. She's in great shape, but she has absolutely no strength in her neck. And when she's on that ride, it literally looks like her head's going to fly off when she's in front of me. I want to reach up and try to help her, and I can't do it. It's like a bobblehead doll going off with.
I was actually surprised my wife went on it the last time we did. It was within the last year or so, year or two. And she's not a really big roller coaster person. I don't think she's ever been on Rock and Roller Coaster. But she went on it, and honestly, it was almost a similar type thing. She literally thought she got off the ride. She had kind of a pain in her head, and I said, "Holy smokes, we're never letting you go on that again."
No,
right.
Brenda, I really honestly, I thought I thought she wasn't going to have a neck left by the time we got off. I mean, her head was like flailing all because I was right behind her. And the other thing is I'm not that big. I'm only 5'10", 175 pounds, and I feel tight in that car. I mean, don't you feel claustrophobic on that ride too?
Yeah, the seating is kind of unless you get a front seat, I think there's a little bit more leg room, or is it the back seat? I'm not sure. But you're right, they're not very spacious by any means.
And they did update it within the last few years. They did make the cars bigger, but they're still not big enough for me.
And for me, I'm just as happy to be crammed in there because I don't want to fly out of it.
No, I hear you. So, but yeah, I'm shocked. I was shocked that didn't make it up higher just because it always seems to be a fan favorite. It's when I book trips for everybody, it's one of the rides on their bucket list, if you follow me, when they're pointing out what they want to do in that park. So I was shocked that was down as far as it is. Now, I wonder how it would work, Bob, if you ever did it without the brackets and just listed all the rides and let people vote. Have you ever done that before?
I mix it up. I mean, I wouldn't take and put like 16 of them all in the same group to let people vote. But I did do something a little bit different this time. What I did with the Epcot and the Hollywood Studios and Animal Kingdom polls is I started with the top 16 from 2014's tournaments in order to keep the polls a little bit more concise and short this year. When I went through the Magic Kingdom data from 2014 and stopped at 16 attractions, there were a lot of attractions that are really good attractions that were going to be omitted. So this year what I did was I started with some bigger groups in sort of like the pre-round one type phase. And what I did was I gave people the opportunity to vote for 3 out of 6 in a group, with the top 4 in each of the 4 groups moving into the the Sweet 16. So, you know, I do mix it up. I've never made a poll that is, is so concise that you can vote for anything in a large group. But this seems to work. It's part of the fun of the tournament. It kind of makes it a little bit of a competition. I am amazed a lot of times that the same attractions can win year after year, especially with Haunted Mansion, for instance, being such a legacy attraction. I think it's great that it has such sustainability that hundreds of fans enjoy it, even in something as simple as this poll. I mean, it got 216 votes over the course of the week in what was four rounds.
Well, I think what's great about the Haunted Mansion is it's universal. Like anybody from your 3 or 4 year old can go on it, all the way up to your grandmother can go on it. It's a ride that everybody can enjoy. I think all ages can enjoy the Haunted Mansion.
Yeah, and also it's a throwback to, some of Disney's early years, and that it's really not even affiliated with a movie, or it's not affiliated with a movie.
Until they made it.
Right, but I mean, initially it was a unique out-of-the-box, idea that wasn't tied to any current franchise that
they
had
going.
It's
my wife's favorite.
Yep.
She has to go on it. Every trip we go on it multiple times. It's one, it's one of those. That's the one she don't drag me on, but she'll let's do it again later on. And she don't do that with many rides. That and Soarin' has to be multiple times. After that, she leaves me alone to do whatever I want. Just those two are her two stipulations. When we're by those two rides, we gotta make sure we have Fast Pass or can get on.
Nothing wrong with that.
She must be really happy then, because Haunted Mansion won Magic Kingdom and Soarin' won Epcot.
Yeah, well, she was on there. She made me vote for him. So you want to give us the Sweet 16, Bob?
Yeah, sure. So what will come next is the campaign to elect the 2015 All-In WDW Readers' Favorite WDW Attraction. So now we're going to aim our guns at which attraction in all four parks is the must-do attraction as far as all in WDW readers are concerned. So, of course, the top four from Magic Kingdom will be the headliners from that park: Haunted Mansion, Splash Mountain, Big Thunder Mountain Railroad, Pirates of the Caribbean. From Epcot, the winner there was Soarin'. Illuminations, Reflections of Earth, Spaceship Earth, and Epcot International Food and Wine Festival will compete. Hollywood Studios will be represented by their winner, Twilight Zone Tower of Terror, Toy Story Midway Mania, Fantasmic, and Rock and Roller Coaster. And Animal Kingdom will be represented by their winner, Expedition Everest, Kilimanjaro Safaris, Festival of the Lion King, and Cali River Rapids. So what I'll do is I will seed them so that the winners will each be at the top of a group of four. So none of them will be faced off in the Sweet 16 round against each other. There will be a second place finisher in each group, a third place finisher, and a fourth place finisher, and no attraction will go up against an attraction from their same park in the first round. And what it'll be is, a chance for the readers and your listeners, if they participate, to take a look and decide, all right, well, if Mansion is up against Toy Story and Festival of the Lion King and the Food and Wine Festival, which one of those would you pick as your favorite? And, we'll see who wins this year. It's always a fun thing. I try to run it going into the Final Four March Madness NCAA basketball tournament. And I'm happy to say that the reigning champion is part of this group. It'll be a challenge for them to retain their title. It's the Epcot International Food and Wine Festival.
Yeah, well, if it shows you that Soarin' and Illuminations took it out so far, and Spaceship Earth, it's going to have an uphill battle this year. The one that I'm most surprised that made it in the Sweet 16 is Cali River Rapids. I mean, that just shocks me that beat out dinosaurs and other things there. Are you surprised that Cali River Rapids are in the Sweet 16?
You know, it's a ride that we don't. Dinosaur finished fifth in that poll, and actually Finding Nemo the musical finished sixth. But it's actually done quite well in the past year's polls. Cali River Rapids is one for us. We always seem to be. You know how, like, when you're going up that one hill, and if you happen to be at kind of the top of the raft in those two seats, those are the seats that you get absolutely torrentially drenched. For some reason, we always end up, and that raft is spinning around right before it gets to that hill. We always end up losing that little bit of roulette. And getting absolutely drenched. The last time we went on it, my son was with me, and it was towards the end of the day. It was kind of a coolish day. It wasn't a 90-degree summer day, and we both got absolutely drenched. I got all sorts of problems from the family on that one. So we haven't been on it since.
I get soaked every time. The last time I was on my brother-in-law, which he's a big guy, but then I got set next to this big. If I didn't know it, he was a football player. He must have weighed 300 pounds. So I knew every single time that thing spun, it was going to land on his side. You know, it's just, you know, the theory of relativity. It's going to go that's going to be where the weight is. And every single wave we hit backwards, my end hit. It was like a tidal wave coming over my back. So every time, that ride is one of those rides that, like you said, it has to be 95. And when we do it, it's the last thing we do before we leave the park. It's like we're walking out the gates if we go on that. I know I'm going home to get a shower.
Yeah, I agree. We do the same thing. And even in doing that, when it's hot out in the summer, when there's some of those buses that when they have the AC cranked up, I mean, I've gone home with goosebumps because all my clothing was so wet. And then you get in that cold bus, and it can be for a very uncomfortable ride back to your resort.
Yeah, I'm lucky. I usually drive to the Animal Kingdom every time. So we got the truck, and we leave the windows open, and we get a nice blow dry. We're like two dogs hanging out the window drying on the way back to the resort.
Imagine taking that bus ride, Dennis, with as you guys know, my son's in medical school now, but when this happened, he was probably still in high school. Imagine taking that cold bus ride back to your resort with your high school son who just got drenched and his very angry mother sitting next to him.
Well, interesting ride.
Yeah. I've been there, done that, got the t-shirt with the women. Yeah, all the girls from the family riding back. Not happy, makeup mushed. But who do you think will win this competition, Den?
Who do I think will win, or who do I want to win?
Well, you can give both. We'll give you the Lou Mangiello answer. You can go two. You get two guesses.
Yeah, right. Yeah, and I'm just thinking back to what Bob said on a prior show that I almost find it hard to believe now that Food and Wine actually won this 1 year. That is correct, right, Bob? They won,
yeah,
it won
last
the
year.
Overall.
They did win it last year. That is correct.
Right. Wow, because it took out some awesome attractions. I'm going to say Soarin'. I mean, that seems so popular, and I know it's a chalk pick or one of the chalk picks, if you will. But I just think that's so popular, and once it gets its third track or third building built, and hopefully they change the movie, I think that's going to be hard to beat going forward in future years' polls.
So who do you want to win?
Who would I want to see win? That's kind of a tough one. I'd like to see Illuminations get in there and win. Now, that has won previously too, right, Bob?
Illuminations has won the Epcot poll previously.
Never the overall.
No, this will be the third year that we do the overall. There's only been two winners. Different winners, so there, you know, Food and Wine did not repeat, but in year one, The Haunted Mansion was the favorite WDW attraction. Actually, that's a little bit of an interesting story, if I could have 30 seconds on this. This was interesting.
I doubt you could do it in 30 seconds, but go ahead.
Okay. You're probably right. I'll tell you, why don't you sit back? Why don't you sit back? Here, here's another loaded margarita. Have that.
There's already 30 seconds, so go.
The interesting thing, and I kind of did a quick summary of it in today's post, 2013 was really interesting when it came to the Magic Kingdom and the favorite WDW attraction, because in the Magic Kingdom poll, the Haunted Mansion, like it did this time around, completely dominated. But when we got the final four, it actually lost the Magic Kingdom attraction poll to Splash Mountain. So a couple weeks later, go ahead. I'll sit back and drink my margarita. You can sing that song.
No, go ahead.
A couple weeks later, I ran WDW Attraction, and the final four included Haunted Mansion and Splash Mountain. And I wrote it as what it was. It was a rematch of sorts, and Haunted Mansion won. So it was really interesting. I mean, to the point of, does the same attraction win every year? Does the same attraction win, when faced off against another? It doesn't work that way. Splash Mountain beat Haunted Mansion for Magic Kingdom attraction, but Haunted Mansion beat Splash Mountain for WDW attraction. That's actually my call for the winner of this year. I think that the whole aura of Haunted Mansion, the fact that it is one of the original attractions, that it's got so much staying power after so many years. My call would be that Haunted Mansion's going to reclaim the crown it had in 2013.
Well, if I'm voting with my partner Dan, I want to see Illuminations out of all these. The one I hope finishes, that I think should finish last, actually. I was shocked that Cali River Rapids is on there, but what do you guys think? I think should finish last.
I think it's gonna be Cali River Rapids.
Okay, I think Expedition Everest should finish last, in my opinion.
Yeah, that ain't gonna happen.
I don't like it, but I'm hoping Illuminations wins, and that's what I'm gonna go with. I'm gonna stay with it, but. I think it'll be the top three. I think Illumination, Soarin', and Haunted Mansion. I think those three are going to be the ones. It's going to be a three-horse race, in my opinion.
I'd love to see that. I mean, Dennis, we'll get to it maybe in a couple of minutes, but Dennis and his lovely wife and Mrs. Allen WDW and I and Dennis's daughter and friend sat and watched Illuminations a couple weeks ago. That was the first time we'd literally seen it. I think I surprised Dennis. I told him probably in over a year. You have to see that more often to be reminded of just how good of an attraction that is. Yeah, absolutely.
Our last trip, we've seen it three times. We go back to Epcot every night. We've seen it three times. I just love the whole feeling that gives you when you're there. And I like the people watch, too, when I'm watching it, just because, because I've seen it so many times, and the music is what does it for me. But just watching a kid or a family that's seen it for the first time, it, makes you feel like you're it's just amazing to see how they can't believe what they're seeing.
Right, and then you got the people that when it slows down in the middle, they start walking away because they think it's done. Mm-hmm. That's all. I always get a kick out of that as well.
Yeah, it's a great show to people watch at, and I love it because you don't feel claustrophobic. You can always find a place to hang out yourself, be with your family, making a moment out of it. And think about it. The amazing thing is every single night that they do this, and it goes off without a flaw. Think about that.
Right, right. I mean, I know they've had problems with it. I mean, but you're right, Doug. It's a very comprehensive show that they start getting ready at mid-afternoon, and there's a lot that goes into it, the propane and all of the lasers and,
all the air guns that shoot the fireworks. Yeah. I mean, it's such a spectacular, but think about it. 99.9% of the time it goes off without a hitch.
Yeah, well, it's funny you say that the air guns, where we happen to be sitting in the Mexico Pavilion. What's the name of that restaurant, Bob, where the outdoor terrace is?
It's La Hacienda, home of the Loaded Margaritas.
one of those air cannons was, you know, in the wall there on the lagoon side, and it couldn't have been more than, it seemed like 10 or 15 feet from us, but a couple of times it kind of startled us because, you know, they'd shoot out of there, and the noise that it makes coming out of there is quite loud when you're standing pretty much right next to it.
Yeah, they're the ones that created that. They came up with that, and that's the amazing thing, the air pressure. That's how they get the fireworks to go to the same exact height every single time. They'd come up with the idea to use the air pressure instead of having to do the pyrotechnics every day. It's less dangerous that way.
Whatever they figured out, they've hit a home run because it is an awesome show.
I thought you were going to say you gave the guy on that barge some margaritas or something, and those ones didn't go off. I thought you guys messed something up over there.
No, no.
Come here, Mr. Illuminations guy. You want a floater? Two bad boys set loose in World Showcase. So let's
Yeah, no
cover that,
kidding.
guys. Let's head on over to the Rose and Crown and tell me how much you guys enjoyed my bangers and mash.
The pressure was on me, obviously. I've been hearing this for the better part of 9 months now since I was there last time, and myself and Bob got the bangers and mash, and they were as advertised. They were fantastic, and or at least I did. We got some appetizers. I think we got some Scotch eggs as well, but.
They're good, aren't they?
Yeah, it's just a kind of a surprising dish with the sausage around the outside of the egg, and there was a some sort of a mustard sauce, if I recall correctly. But they were very good. But to get back to the bangers and mash, I mean, I totally agree with you, Doug. In all seriousness, for the dollar you pay, and the presentation of the dish, and just the flavor of it, I mean, you can't go wrong. I mean, that is, I would put that under the category of just good old comfort food. I mean, it's just delicious, and I really enjoyed that dinner.
Yeah, 100%. That's my whole point. I mean, that bangers and mash, the sausage that comes with that is like the filet mignon of sausage. It's not filet mignon. I'm not saying it's like eating a Le Cellier or Yachtsman steak or anything like that, or what you guys have at the California Grill. But just for the amount of money you pay and the quality of the meat, I mean, that and probably over at the 50s Prime Time, I'd say those two restaurants for the money are probably the best meals on property. That and like Mom's Meatloaf over at 50s Prime Time. Would you agree with me?
Oh, yeah. I mean, again, and you hit the nail on the head because 50s Prime Time is primarily comfort food. You got, all those dishes that you
Fried
might
chicken,
remember. Yeah.
meatloaf, pot roast. But what my point is, for $14.99 for that meal, how do you go wrong, Bob? I mean, is that crazy
Well,
or what? Getting served something at Disney World for $14.99.
Actually, it's $17.99. I'm looking at my receipt
Well,
right
at
now.
dinner, for lunch it's $14.99.
Okay.
Go ahead.
I
No,
see.
it's
It's the same meal.
absolutely, it's phenomenal. I mean, like for instance, we did get the Scotch egg, and it was very good. It was the first time we had ever had it. In fact, I haven't even had a chance to publish the picture yet. Maybe I'll try to do that next week. But that. I mean, it was about $9, $10, and the bangers and mash are, as you said, $14, $15, $17. I mean, the only thing I would say about the bangers and mash, it is really, really good. It's really the shallot gravy that,
It's
in my
awesome, isn't it?
mind, that makes it for me. But and I don't want to sound like I got to sit there and eat, three servings of the stuff, but it's one of those types of things that after you get done with the first serving, you can say, can I have seconds, please? I mean, it is really, really good. So we thoroughly enjoyed it. I'd had it before, as you guys know. We had a little bit of fun with you, Doug. Trying to get you convinced that Dennis was, ready to push the button on ordering some fish and chips, but I'd say we all enjoyed what we ordered
Yeah.
that night.
Oh, it's amazing. And the point is, it was 14. Yeah, for some reason it still says $14.99 here, Dan. It was weird. It said $15.99 on the lunch menu, and now it's saying $14.99 on the dinner menu.
I can assure you we paid $17.99, but even at that price, it's a bargain.
It's incredible. It's a great meal. It's one of those things you're not going to eat every day. I don't recommend anybody eat it every day because it wouldn't be great for you, but you're right, Bob. You, like the last time we were down, you can't get enough of it. Then 2 days later, after we'd already eaten there, we were back at Epcot, and we didn't have a dining. We didn't have any reservation, any ADRs. And I said, "What do you guys want?" And my sister-in-law goes, "I really could eat that bangers and mash again." And my wife didn't get it that she got the salmon. She goes, "You know what? I've been upset since we ate there that I didn't end up getting it." So they didn't have to twist my arm more than once to go back and get it again.
Bob, before we get off of Rose and Crown, you may remember this better than I do, but I do remember. Somebody at the table also ordered something called, was it Bubbles, Squeak, and Mash? Does that ring a bell?
It's actually called Bubble and Squeak, and sadly, I forgot to take a picture of it.
Oh.
but it was kind of like almost a hash brown type thing.
Oh, okay, now I remember.
Yeah, so it was good actually. You know, when I got you'll appreciate this, Doug. When I got finished with the actual bangers and mash, I still had some of the demi-glaze, the gravy left. So what I did was I took some of the Bubble and Squeak, which is the
hash browns,
and I put it in the gravy so I could make complete use of all that lovely tastiness.
It's amazing. We make it here at home because we're pretty lucky. We have this local farmers market that sells fresh sausage. It is really, really good, and we'll go over there and buy it fresh, like it's made like the day before, if you follow me. And we make it every once in a while. We'd make it more, but again, my wife's a health nut, so it's like couple times a year we're only allowed to have it, if you follow me. If it's up to me, it would be on the menu every week. You know,
so
oh, go ahead, Bob.
Well, I'm sorry, Dennis, but I was going to ask Doug a question. So are the bangers and mash different from lunch to dinner? Because I'm looking at the menu on WDW's website, and it's describing a shallot gravy at lunch, but when you look at the dinner recipe, it actually describes a caramelized onion jam and red wine demi.
Yeah, I they're the same exact. I've eaten them at both. I've tasted nothing different. I don't know why that is, to be honest with you, Bob. I have no clue, but it's always been the same to me. I've never had it different, and if I did, I'd be the first one to jump up and down because I want it the way it is.
Right.
No, but yeah, it's incredible.
And the good thing about it is where we had six people at the table, we did order a good segment of the menu. Somebody got the corned beef cabbage, the vegetable cottage pie, and, of course, the bangers and mash, and somebody got the fish and chips. So, you know, we got to sample, like I said, a good portion of the menu, and I don't recall anybody being disappointed with their entree or their appetizer.
No,
I think the only comment that I would make on the fish and chips, Mrs. Allen WDW ordered it, and she's ordered it before, but she's pretty clearly come away from the last couple visits to Rose and Crown preferring the pieces of fish that you get outside at Yorkshire. And the reason is, when you order the fish and chips at Rose and Crown Dining Room, they're going to give you one big, nice piece of fish. When you order it at Yorkshire, you're going to get a couple smaller pieces, which are individually battered and fried. So when it comes to a choice between the two, she would actually pick outside. But clearly she likes it, or she wouldn't have ordered it again.
Yeah, I think they give you more batter on the outside ones, too. I think they're battered more.
Yeah, that could be. And it was interesting because Mrs. Allen WDW did ask if she could get, you know, two individual pieces. And the waiter, you know, very nicely explained that I guess it's just one big piece. Although I don't know why they couldn't have just cut it in half and did it. But nevertheless, that's what we were told.
No, but the prices in here, everything in there. I mean, it's a nice restaurant to go out, and you don't feel like you're being killed when the bill comes.
No, I'm looking at it here, and well, it's not the whole bill though, so that ain't gonna work. But you're right, Doug. It was very reasonable, and the waiter we had was very you know, efficient, and he took care of us, and it was a good night had by all.
Yeah, I've never been disappointed at that restaurant. I can't even count how many times we've eaten there. And it's one of those things where, like, the first, I don't know, 6, 7, 8, 10 times we went to Disney World, every time we go by there, we say, we got to eat there. And I know you guys have done this with many restaurants. Am I wrong that you've said in past you want to eat there and you kept putting it off? And now I'm sad that I did so many years, because the last 10 years we haven't missed it one time. And it all started over a joke, because – we were headed down, and a day early we decided to go down. We needed a reservation, so I started joking about the stupid bangers and mash. And the whole way on, because we all had walkie-talkies in the car, and the whole way I kept saying, I'm getting the bangers and mash, bangers and mash. And it was one of those jokes, a family joke. Now it ended up becoming a family tradition every time we go to Disney World.
Yeah, it's funny you say that. And over my stay down there, it's kind of weird, because I would overhear people, even back at Port Orleans or wherever we happen to be, and you'd be surprised how many times you hear bangers and mash, or we had it, or we're going to have it, or whatever. And I don't know, I just seem to hear a lot about it, even not being in the Rose and Crown.
Yeah, it's a great restaurant.
So I mean, it's one of the most, according to my readers at least, because we have run the Epcot, we have run table service polls, but it's one of the best recommendations that my readers or I would give with regard to Epcot dining. You know, out of the top four restaurants for Epcot, it was actually the fourth behind Biergarten, Le Cellier, and Via Napoli.
Okay.
That's not too bad.
It would be number one for me out of the four. Le Cellier and this would be 1 and 1A. Le Cellier just rubbed me, and we've talked a million times about it. It just, they started to smell themselves, if that makes any sense to you. It seems like the whole attitude in that restaurant has changed since they become like the biggest and the go-to place. Do you guys agree with me there? It don't even seem as friendly as it used to, and I still love it. Still want to go there, but it just seems like it's a assembly line there now. They want to get you in and out of that restaurant.
Our last experience there wasn't what we would expect for a signature restaurant, but I have to admit it was as walk-ins at lunch with a group of four, and you know, I don't know if they were just having a bad start to the day, or if there was something else going on. But the difficulty that we have with Le Cellier is that we have some steak restaurants here in Atlanta that we go to from time to time that are just, in our minds and palates, so much better than the cut of steak that Le Cellier is providing, that it's difficult to go, even, and I would say the same, not to be unfair to Le Cellier, the same to California Grill, to be honest. You know, both fantastic signature restaurants. I've ordered filet at both. In fact, I used to love Le Cellier's
petite wild filet
mushroom.
Is my favorite.
Yeah, the filet with the risotto.
Yeah.
But we have a place we go to here that has a cut of filet that's just so many steps above in quality than both Le Cellier and California Grill, in our estimation, that we just don't. It's just not high on our list to frequent. I would prefer to go Rose and Crown, to be honest with you, because I'm not going to find bangers and mash around here.
No, I hear you. Yeah, for me, I still love Le Cellier. I think the meat is great. All the memories I have, because we've eaten there, I can't even count how many times. It's just the point. Like, we used to go in there, and you never felt like they wanted you to leave. Like, now I feel like the menus, the check's coming to you halfway through your meal. That's my problem with it. They feel like they want to turn the restaurant over so quick, they can't wait to get you out. And that's not fine dining to me.
Yeah, and I think that that's exactly correct, Doug, that given the seating capacity of that restaurant is so small to begin with, they, you know, they're trying to cycle as many guests in and out of there as possible, you know, for the, for, you know, t- to maximize profits. So I don't think that's a perception on your part. I bet you that's part of their strategy.
Yeah.
Get them in, get them out, so we can get more folks in here.
Yeah, and when I used to go there, and again, I loved the atmosphere. I could still see my father's no longer with me, and one of my best memories is, like, right now I can close my eyes and see the man sitting across the table from me. I know the exact table we're at. It's like the beauty of the restaurant. I have so many wonderful memories down there. But it's the last couple times we've eaten there, and I'm not trying to sound cheap or whatever, because I'm not. That's why I've eaten there so many times. But it don't even seem like they fill the pretzels as much, because they don't want you meandering around there. Does that make sense? See, they used to come halfway through the meal and give you more pretzel sticks.
Right.
Now they don't do that because they don't want you hanging out afterwards. If you don't get dessert, they want you going.
Yeah, no, I definitely think that's part of their strategy, because they don't have the luxury of room and space there. So they're trying to get you in and get you out. And that's unfortunate, because, you know, fine dining, that's part of the whole package, if you will. It's taking your time and going through the courses and having some conversation and all that stuff.
Yeah, ordering another beer, like when you're almost done your meal, get that last beer. You can have a pretzel stick to finish the night off. Let them take away everything. Just because you're not eating dessert don't mean you want to run out the door.
Exactly.
So let's go around World Showcase a little bit for food and or Flower and Garden. I keep saying Food and Garden because of Bob here. But for Flower and Garden,
it is what it should be called.
Yes. Well, because you're a foodie. Flower and Garden was around before they put them kiosks there, Bob. Don't you forget that.
Well, it's all a matter of time.
Yeah. Well, you guys want to start talking about some of the standouts from around the World Showcase?
Yeah, I mean, for those that have heard the previous show, we did some live reviews from several of the marketplace booths around the World Showcase, so you can listen to them to get specific comment on each dish. But just off the top of my head, I have to go directly to Florida Fresh. That was a booth that I didn't think I was going to be too thrilled with, but by the time I was done, it was probably the best, well, one of the best dishes that we had all day long, which was the shrimp with the stone ground grits. Again, even though the word cilantro was in the ingredients or on the listed ingredients, it was just a couple of sprigs on top that I could easily just knocked
brush
off.
Aside.
yeah. And it was just awesome. I mean, you know, I think I used the term a destination dish. If you could only do a couple of dishes, or you're only going to be in World Showcase for, you know, a couple of hours on one day or something, this is definitely a dish that you want to seek out, because in my view, it's one of the best that the festival has to offer this year anyways.
You loved it so much, you even bought a hat from there, didn't you, Dan?
Oh, I did. I actually bought a smokehouse hat, which I didn't eat anything at, which is kind of strange. But yeah, getting back to Florida Fresh, though, I think Bob would somewhat agree with my comments.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, I saw those hats, too. And as if it were last year or the year before, I probably would have bought one, but this year it passed.
Yeah.
But the shrimp and stone ground grits I had going into the festival on my pre-festival list at number 3. I haven't published the final list yet because I focused on Magic Kingdom this past week. But once I get back into Food and Garden this week, it'll culminate with the shrimp and stone ground grits finishing as well at number 3. And honestly, I love the phrase that you used. It's a destination dish.
Now listen to Dennis, the poet over here.
The food.
Yeah,
I
think it was very appropriate. You know, I generally would say that if there's something on my list that I would really recommend that everybody try, I'd call it a must-have. But destination dish really is the definition behind the must-have, as far as I'm concerned.
Go ahead, and Jay, give it full carte blanche to write that in his article.
Oh, yeah.
Give it to him, Dan. It's
full release. Not a problem.
You'll get full credit.
Oh, I know that.
But really, I mean, you know, there's a great flavor. The only thing I felt bad about was that we were going through World Showcase sharing the dishes, and when we got to Florida Fresh, because it had the cilantro in it, and because I dearly wanted to have the shrimp and stone ground grits again, I stuck you with the watermelon salad, gave you a taste of the shrimp and grits, and then I went ahead and polished the rest of it off.
See yeah, how he is then? You see how he is, hey, buddy?
No, it was all good. And I do want to just make comment of the watermelon salad, because that was a fantastic dish as well. I wouldn't rank it near as high as the the shrimp dish, but very refreshing, and it was very, very good. And I know we commented on the balsamic vinegar and just how good that was, and that really ties that whole salad together. But that was a surprisingly good dish for me as well.
Best balsamic that I've ever tasted. I mean, there's a lot of body to it, and I got you a little bit all choked up there, Dennis,
right,
as you tried
right.
to get that. But it's just outstanding. I always underestimate that dish. It came into the festival at number 12 for me on my pre-festival top 15, and it did move up in the final rankings.
I think it deserves to, but again, there's a lot of other good things on that list, so it's difficult to do. But high marks for Florida Fresh, without a doubt, at least in my mind.
What else was a standout to you guys? I would have been a little bit away from the balsamic vinegar. I like balsamic vinaigrette, but it has to be subtle. If it's too overpowering, it's not for me. So.
Yeah, everyone has their own taste. I mean, there was another vinaigrette that I had on one of the dishes in Urban Farm Eats, I believe, that I had, Bob. Actually, one of the dishes I tried for you that you didn't get a chance to get, and the name is escaping me right now, that wasn't near as good. It was a lot tamer and blander, but then again, Doug, that might be something you would have liked better.
Yeah, I'm not a vinegar person, you know what I mean? I don't mind cooking with it, but I don't pour, you know how people like to pour vinegar on certain things? They like to eat vegetables with vinegar or whatever. Right. I can't do that. My brother could drink a bottle of vinegar. I think it's my brother who did it to me. I like to be the opposite of him, so I don't like vinegar, Don. So what was one of the disappointments at the show?
The entire smokehouse, in my mind, was a disappointment. You guys know that because I texted you after the first day we were there. You kindly had me on a couple weeks back to talk about Food and Garden, and I was just raving and raving about the smokehouse, but I just didn't feel they brought it this year. The pulled pig slider wasn't good in my mind until the second or third time that I tried it. And I did give it, because it was such a great dish in 2013 and 14, I did, go back on different days and, give it another try. It's still going to end up as what I would call a must-have dish, because it's probably one of the best values in the entire festival from a size and portion standpoint. I have to be honest, I needed to have – it was a little on the drier side, and I needed to have some water or even a Billy's Chili's beer to wash it down. The smoked Debrisoner sausage, it had a great spice to it. It was definitely a healthy-sized portion. Pictures of these, by the way, for your listeners, they could find on allinwdw.com. Just scroll through the post or in the search box, type the name of the dish, and you should find it. But the smoked sausage had, I told Dennis, just a little bit of an odd aftertaste to me. Not even as much an aftertaste, but the seasonings in the sausage itself just had a little bit of an odd taste that hid behind the spiciness, and it just wasn't something I needed to have again. And the beef brisket burnt ends hash, I may be in the minority on this one, because most of what I've seen on the internet, people have liked it and likened it to things that they've had in Kansas, Texas, etc. Maybe I'm just not into burnt ends because I felt the portion size was small. The beef was, the serving of, or the amount of the beef in the portion was just very small itself as well. And of course, as per its name, it was burnt. That in my mind, as I look at where I ranked it pre-festival at number 5 to where it is right now, which is barely hanging on to the top 15, is the biggest disappointment in the entire festival outside of the booth itself. In fact, Dennis, I go so far as to say my favorite thing at that booth this year was the Billy's Chili's beer.
Wow. Yeah, the only thing I had from the smokehouse, and one of the days I went back after you guys left town, I had the Category 3 IPA, and it was good, but I did not partake in any of the food offerings this year. There was just so many other things to have, and I was kind of going on your recommendation, if you will, that there was nothing spectacular there, so I wanted to try some other stuff, which I did, and I was glad that I did do that.
One of the things that I got you to try that you were really surprised by that wasn't even on your own pre-festival top 15 was that white corn arepa with braised beef at Botana's Botanica. Could you comment on the flavor there?
Yeah, I mean, the braised beef was very tender and soft, and like you described it, Bob, kind of a half of an English muffin, if you can envision that, although it didn't have the consistency of an English muffin. It was more doughy or bread-like, if you will. But it had a very nice flavor to it, and I was pleasantly surprised with that because reading the description and then actually trying the dish totally turned my mind around. I mean, that was probably, I would say, maybe the third best thing that we had that day that we did our little report. So, high marks for the white corn arepa. That was very good.
I had an English muffin this morning at Doug's Express, and it had a little bit of jelly and a little bit of butter on it, and it was really, really good.
Yeah, nice. And I guess sticking with that, Doug, to answer your question, for me, and again, just personal preference, I mean, a disappointing thing for me because it was very high on my list going into the festival was the seafood cervici shrimp dish, which was only because of the cilantro issue. And it's going to fall off my list, but I know that Bob ranks this dish very high on his list.
Yeah, I'm sorry, but my problem with shrimp would be is I'm like, know how you're a fish, you're very picky with your fish?
Mm-hmm.
I'm very picky with my shrimp. If shrimp don't have the absolute, like, that's why I went crazy with, we talked about our going over to Spice Road Tables. If my shrimp don't have the exact texture to it, I don't like it. If it's too soft or too hard, it has to be Goldilocks perfect in the middle. That makes sense to you guys.
Just perfect.
Yes. I don't like a shrimp that's too soggy. Do you agree with me? Like if you bite it, it's too gooey.
Right.
No. I hear you. And, you know, this dish for me, Dennis has the distaste or dislike for the cilantro, and I understand that. And he kindly was brave enough to try the seafood ceviche. I found it very refreshing. And the first time I had it, to your point, Doug, the seafood was very fresh. The vegetables were crisp. It has a little bit of grouper in it,
That's exactly how I would have it. It has to be perfect. That's the hard part of shrimp because you could go there, to make your point, you could go to that stand probably 3 different times in a day, and I bet you it would taste different every time.
The second time that I had it, I will admit, it was not as crisp as it was the first time. So you're spot on in your comments.
Yes, that's just my problem with shrimp. I'd have to be standing there and see the man take it off the grill for me to eat it. You know, it couldn't be sitting around for me. If and that's just how I am with shrimp. I love it, but if it's cooked wrong, like I cook my own all the time. And there's times where I feel like is it overcooking? Because she's the same way. No, it's perfect. But there's times where it's either undercooked or over, and I won't want to eat it. So that would be a hard stand to keep to be good for me.
Right, right.
Actually, for me, you know, the stand that I thought did the best job for the entire festival either came down to Botana's Botanico or Florida Fresh. Botanico also had a third dish, a cachapas with farmer's cheese, which was basically kind of like a corn pancake with cheese melted on the top of it. That although it was more of a sort of an ordinary type thing, allowed it to get three dishes into my top 15 for recommendations.
My brother Don would call that a hillbilly grilled cheese. That's what my brother Don would call that. It'd be a hillbilly grill. I'm going to go back and get me one of those hillbilly grilled cheese.
So there's one marketplace or kitchen that I would that completely hit the stay far away list as far as I was concerned for the festival, and that was Morocco. I don't call it my biggest disappointment like I did for the smokehouse, because I just had such high expectations for the smokehouse. But as I go through my top 15, I'll also take some of the other things we may have tried, and I'll make a list of honorable mentions. And if something's really bad enough, I'll make a short list of dishonorable mentions. And I have to tell you, Morocco as a kitchen and both of their dishes, their falafel pocket and their harissa chicken kebab, hit the dishonorable mention.
Oh, wow.
Good at all, huh?
Yeah, I'm just looking at my notes here, Bob. The Urban Farm Eats is where I had the kale salad, which came with dried cherries, almonds, goat cheese, and that's where they had the white balsamic that was not near as good as what we had over at Florida Fresh. So that there's that. And I just wanted to get in an honorable mention here, too. When I went back to the festival later in the week, we got up a little late one day and didn't eat breakfast or anything. So I went over to World Showcase while the rest of the family was off doing something else. I forget what it was. But I actually tried the pineapple dog from Pineapple Promenade. That was the spicy hot dog with the pineapple chutney. That and the sriracha mayo. That was awesome. Did you have one of those, Bob?
I did. It was the what I think is really, you know, a nice sriracha mayo on top of the dog. They could leave the pineapple off, to be honest with you, from my regard, but really gave it a nice flavor. Much different than you would expect when you're just having, you know, sort of a run-of-the-mill hot dog. It did hit my top 15. I just thought that there were some other more original dishes that just beat it out. It finished at number 11.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, it's a hot dog on a bun, and you know, I get that. I think it somewhat had to do with the fact that I was starving when I got there, so I probably could have had anything, and I would have loved it. But that, I don't know, that just that hit the spot for me. And I got with it the berry tea cocktail, which was the mixed berry tea and strawberry-flavored vodka. That was horrible. It was bland, and I don't know, I just didn't like that at all. But I wanted to try one of the cocktails at that booth, but not impressed with that.
You had a combination that not many people wake up in the morning and say, I'm going to go get a vodka and a hot dog.
Well, that was the recommended pairing, Doug, so somebody came up with that.
Yeah, something's wrong there. I'm going to have a vodka and a hot dog today, and then later on I'm going to get a tequila and a cheeseburger. I'm living large.
Well, maybe that was the problem. There wasn't much vodka in there because it was very, very bland and weak, although it was the festival had just opened, so maybe they didn't really get things going there till later on, but I tried it nevertheless.
Nah, it sounded good. I would like to have the hot dog. I mean, America was built on hot dogs. That's why that's right. The only good thing that you get over at the – well, now you can, but before at the Liberty Inn.
Right.
At least if the hot dog was cold, you could still eat it.
I mean, the reason that I wanted to try it is because at Food & Wine, South Korea marketplace does supply that kimchi dog that's very, very good. It's got a little bit of a slaw on top, which I've tried to mimic here. At home, and it also has like a really spicy mustard. That hot dog's very, very good too, and it's, you know, basically a run-of-the-mill hot dog. It's the condiments that are making
right.
dish.
Right.
So this was very similar to that, but I would rank this below that kimchi dog.
Okay. I guess I would agree because I've had that kimchi dog too, and it's delicious. And I think you're right. It kind of in presentation and everything else, except for the condiments or the flavorings they put on it. It's very similar. Very similar.
So you're gonna have Dennis, to. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Bob.
No, I was gonna say, Dennis, you also tried at Urban Farm Eats that quinoa vegetable non-witch. What were your thoughts about that?
Yeah, that was. Horrible, only because the and it was an arugula pesto on it with oven dried tomatoes. It was a obviously a vegetarian offering, but the pita bread or whatever bread it was supposed to come on was very, very hard. And I wrote a note down here that it almost had the consistency of a cracker. And I think you and I talked, Bob, or texted, I forget which. You said yours, when you tried it, was a little bit softer. Had it been softer, I think it would have been a little more palatable. But for me, that just didn't cut it.
Yeah, mine had a, I'm going to say it wasn't as good as, but still a Sanaa-type softness to it. It was easily foldable. I was really surprised by the quinoa. Basically, what it was almost like a little, if you can imagine, like a salmon patty or a tuna patty or a crab cake. Mm-hmm. It was made in a patty. And I actually went up to the chef after I tried it. It was something that I put on my honorable mentions. I mean, it's not something I necessarily had to have again. The naan was very nice because it didn't, you know, they didn't present it the way they presented yours in a cracker-like form. But right. I went up and I asked him. I said, what the binder that was in there, and because it wasn't just quinoa, you could tell there was something in the cake with it. Mm-hmm. And it turns out it was white beans. Between the beans and the quinoa, with the pesto on top, it actually was very tasty. It was a lot like last year at Food and Wine they had that crabless crab cake that we always tease you about.
Right.
This I would put almost in the same category, something that I wouldn't necessarily have tried. Because I more tend to the meat and potatoes end of the spectrum, that like the crabless crab cake wasn't all that bad.
Right. Well, all I can say about Urban Farm Eats, the best thing I had there all week long was the Urban Mary's. Those were very good. It was their spin on a Bloody Mary, obviously. But I had to laugh, and it is what it is, because they're all little, appetizer-type presentations for both food and drink. But it came in something maybe a little bigger than a shot glass, it seemed like to me. And, but they were very, it was very, very good. And they had some pickled vegetables that they put in there, and each one came like with a string bean in it. And at first I was just going to throw it out. I said, oh, this is just garnish, but I'm glad I tried it because it had awesome flavor to it. So I was looking forward to the string beans on my future visits to Urban Farm Eats throughout the week.
So you're going to be, Bob, you're going to do the whole recap of this on all in WDW in the coming weeks?
Yeah, later this week, I got to jump back into the menus. I was actually publishing the kiosk menus when I took a brief break to jump over to the Magic Kingdom poll. I'm going to complete those, in which case, when I do present them, if I have a recommendation at each particular outdoor kitchen, I'll go ahead and I'll give that recommendation, from as good as must have to as bad as stay far away. and then after I'm completed with the menus, I will present my final top 15, with really about a month left, a little over a month left to the festival, in hopes that anybody that reads All in WDW or listens to WDW Main Street can use it as a list of recommendations, so that when they do get to the festival, I mean, these dishes are expensive. The price goes up every year. Dennis, I don't know if you like really
has
noticed,
anything ever gone down? But, I mean,
I mean, well, but up to the point that, like, some of the dishes that, you know, we that traditionally have been maybe in the $4 and something range are now upwards of $5.75 and more $6+ dishes than I remembered in the past. So it's expensive to go and taste all these different things, and I want to give people an opportunity, at least from my palate, to say, okay, well, if you're going to only have three things, these are the three I would recommend.
Well, even if you guys mention it, like Dennis just did, the great thing is like with the one dish where it's heavy on the balsamic vinegar, you guys were saying, now yous liked it, but that would steer me away from it. So even if they don't like, even if their opinion is different from yours, you're at least describing to them what it tastes like so they can get some pointers of what they might like and might not, even if they disagree with you. They'll
right.
still know what's in the dish. Like you
right.
talking about the, with the, whatchamacallit, you don't like the cilantro on top of your stuff. So they'll
right.
know going in that has very little. They could kick it off and still try it. Now, me, if I seen cilantro, I might not try that because I don't want it cooked into it. But now
right.
you're telling me I can try it, which is a
yeah,
good thing.
Yeah, and Bob has driven this point home time and time again, and we've discussed it. I mean, no two palates are alike, and there are no right or wrong answers to any of these offerings or questions, you know, the food items they're offering. It's just one person's opinion based on what they like or don't like or what spices they prefer or what, you know, vinegars or sauces or whatever. So you're right, Doug, that's a good thing. And we can give an overview and it might, you know, save some people some money if they, you know, if somebody was like me, for instance, and they didn't like cilantro, well, they're not going to spend money on the, you know, the dish, the seafood ceviche there, you know, because they're not going to enjoy, they're not going to like it because they don't like cilantro. So maybe they save their money to get something else that they're, that they would like.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, there's a couple of dishes that you could make that description. I think, Doug, if I remember correctly, you're not, like me, you're not a fan of corn tortillas.
No.
The marinated pork corn tortilla at Mexico, the marinated pork is fantastic. It's got a really great flavor to it. It's just if you don't like corn tortillas, you're either going to eat it without tortilla or you're going to pass by that dish. Another dish, if you
now,
don't
like... Now, did they have white or brown rice offerings there at that booth?
No.
Okay, I was just curious because maybe sometimes you can maybe get it put on a bed of rice if you understand what I'm saying. Which would probably be very, very good. Do you disagree with me?
No, I probably would be. And one of the things that I actually thought to do is just figured out logistically how I would do it is I had actually thought to, and I've done this in the past. Like, for instance, Mexico had a pork taco one year that was covered with ground up pork rinds. And the taste of the pork rind was just way too strong for me. It made me, yeah, it just sort of like buried the rest of the dish. So the next time I went back, I asked them to give me the dish. It was on a flour tortilla without the pork rind. And it was fantastic. Well, yeah. with this one on the corn tortilla, I thought if I could find a way to get a hold of a flour tortilla and take it with me to the festival,
yeah.
I would just scoop the pork off that and onto the flour tortilla and try it that way and see if I like it.
Go into La City Angelos and see if they'll sell you one flour tortilla.
One flour tortilla. What do you want? What do you want that for, sir?
Yeah. You could have went to Publix or something, Bob, and just stuck it in your back pocket or something.
yeah, that sounds appetizing.
Yeah.
There's another dish if, like, for instance, since we got on the topic of, you know, some of the details of the dish and whether you like something or not, the Parisian-style dumplings in France, they're good, but if you don't like garlic, you might want to stay away. I mean, that's just another little tip.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
Well, Bob, it's funny you say that because we walked by that and you could smell the garlic. I mean, we didn't stop on the day we were in World Showcase, but you come over that bridge and you can smell that booth from quite a far ways away, particularly the garlic, which I did go back and get the dumplings later on in the day. I think I told you I really enjoyed that dish. It was very, very good. I that's going to make my top 15 list post festival.
and mine as
now,
well.
I would probably love that.
Now, I'm surprised. Sorry, Bob. I'm just going to get this in. I'm surprised that I know you're not a big mushroom guy, so I'm assuming you just picked the mushrooms out because you could do that with this
dish.
No,
I like mushrooms. I don't like –
No, Bob.
Oh, okay.
Bob is, I think, doesn't like mushrooms.
No, it's true. I don't. Mrs. All in WDW will tell you that I don't like mushrooms when I don't want to like mushrooms. But in this case, I mean, the mushrooms were I hadn't intended on trying this dish this year, but I have to be honest with you. Morocco was just so bad. I wanted to try something that I felt was going to be able to knock Morocco off my final top 15. And I had these dumplings in 2014, even with the mushrooms, and they were pretty tasty. So I tried them again this year, and sure enough, it'll make my final top 15. I did eat the mushrooms, and she's right. I mean, there are some times where I do eat mushrooms, sometimes I don't. If you put them on a pizza, I'm not going to eat them.
But anyway, well, that's going to be about it for the food and flower and garden. I'm going to touch something real quick because we're in Lou Mangiello territory here. You got to go over and see Yeehaw Bob for the first time at Riverside. Did you enjoy that?
It was fantastic. We really enjoyed it. It's a River Roost is a nice little place to hang out. It's a nice little place to hang out. We had a couple of drinks. We had some floaters in the margaritas. No, it was really enjoyable all around. I think every one of us enjoyed it.
I love sitting with a group of people with them couches. It's just so comfortable back there.
Yeah, we actually got a table, not right up front, but on the other side of the wall there, Doug, because I wanted – well, we had our choice. Bob and Mrs. All and WDW got there a little early, so we could have had a table or a couch and chair. But we opted to get up a little closer so they could really enjoy the show. And it was actually a special night because some fans of Bob – they actually brought in three big boxes of plastic bowler hats. They were bright red like the hats he wears.
Yep.
So what they did is they passed them out free of charge to everybody that was in the River Roost before Bob came out. And I think he was a little taken back by it in a good way because, of course, he came out.
Probably honored. He was probably a little.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure he was touched by it. But he had his yellow garb on the night we saw him. So, first thing he does when he gets up there on stage says, well, if somebody told me it was red hat night, I would have wore my red hat, you know. So he stuck one of the plastic hats over his yellow hat, and he played that way the whole night that we were there.
Did you get some pictures of that?
I got one or two. I know Bob took some.
We should post them on the website so everybody can see it.
Yeah, and also I'll just give Bob a plug. If you go to Yeehaw Bob on Facebook or whatever, he posted he had somebody in the audience take his 35mm camera, and this guy must have taken, I swear, he took 200 pictures. And actually, there are some that you can see, the four of us in various looking like a tree with branches and, that whole thing. So, there's pictures out there. But it was a great night, and God, this has got to be over a dozen times that I've seen him.
Absolutely.
And he never disappoints. He's just a ball of energy and, a fun time, can be had, whether you're three or, 93, you can have fun at a Yeehaw Bob show.
See, Mrs. Main Street now, she makes me sit out on the couches. We're not allowed to get too close. She don't want to get any shrap metal, get drug into the show. She's always being an outside observer. She, she has to be like eight margaritas in to get her in that train.
Right.
That ain't happening.
Yeah, we weren't too – we didn't participate too much in that stuff. We did some of the
We sing along.
Yeah. And then it's not forced. I mean, if you're really not into it, or in my case, couldn't really walk anyways, which you'll hear about on a future show. But we, like I said, we had fun, and it was a great night and great company. So it was awesome.
I consider it one of the best hidden gems on all Walt Disney World property. He's special.
Yeah, and I did learn, and I didn't know this from talking to one of the bartenders there earlier in the night, who I have seen since we've been going to Riverside. You know, I asked him how long he had been there, and he said 16 and a half years. I said, oh, that makes sense. And then he said, the only guy that got me beat is Bob. He's been there 18 years now doing that show.
Mm-hmm. It sounds he was there the year, first year we went down then.
Yeah, yeah, no doubt, no
97.
Doubt.
97. So. He's been there since I remember stumbling across him, me and my wife. We were so happy to see him.
Right.
It was just a good time. It was like, oh, what's this going on? And isn't he crazy? And then he's like, it's a crazy good time. And there's a familiar thing going on here. You guys know way too many bartenders down there.
Yeah, right. And also, we lucked out, Bob. I didn't share this with you, but I don't know if you caught Bob or heard what he said, I guess, more rightly. He actually flew out to Cleveland the next morning. He was doing something for Give Kids the World up there. So when we went back or when we came back from wherever we were the next night, whatever park we were at or whatever, they had a fill-in for Bob, and it was just kind of this guy playing he had an acoustical guitar and he played a little bit of piano, but what a difference. I mean,
no, Bob.
The place was half empty, and I can only imagine that, a lot of people probably showed up there to see Bob and were disappointed he wasn't there. But had we chosen another night, where I'm heading to here, Bob, we might not have got to see him because he did take Saturday. I think that would have been Saturday night off. So that would have been a bummer if we made plans to go over and he wasn't even playing.
Yeah, no, you're right. He's a tough act to follow. I wouldn't want to be the entertainer that had to fill in for him.
Yeah, and I mean, we were commenting, and it's been many years since I've sat up that close, because I usually do what Doug said. We get a couch in the back there and more listen to the music than actually see the show. But he must have went on for what, an hour and 10 minutes or better, Bob, from when he first started?
I don't know where he gets his energy.
I don't either. I mean, Dennis and myself, we kept talking about him doing three sets. There's no way he fit three sets in that night. He just went like well over an hour in the first set. And then, of course, after the first set and the break, the place cleared out a little bit. And then he went on to do it again. Geez, he's got more energy than I have in a week.
And you could really notice sitting up close, and I never really noticed this, but I mean, he was sweating. I mean, I know he always wipes his brow and, how's my hair look and that whole thing. But I mean, his shirt was soaking wet. I mean, that man was,
earning his bucks.
Yeah, he was working up a lather there, no doubt about it. But
We've sat on the table inside where he performs, up mm-hmm. on the right-hand side towards the wall where you go into boat rides. You know what I'm talking about? That outside wall.
Yep.
We've sat there before, but to be honest with you, we don't want to be totally involved. We like to just chill in the back on the couches. But the other thing is I've seen him so many times. I mean, I've stayed at Riverside, like we said, 20-some times. I've seen him every trip. So I stay in the back also, so people there are seeing him for the first time could get to enjoy. You understand what I'm saying? I don't need to be up there.
Right.
I want to let people have the opportunity to sit up close, if that makes sense to you guys.
Yeah, no, that makes perfect sense. And, like I said, you can participate as much or as little as you want. But if you try not to do anything, he won't let you have that. He'll get you clapping at least.
There's even been times, I'm honest with you, that me and my wife were sitting there enjoying ourselves, and we've seen families come in that didn't have room to sit.
Right.
And we've got up and left so they can enjoy it, because I want everybody to experience it. You know what I'm saying? So we've got up and just walked out and stood outside for a couple minutes and then went back to the resort, because we've seen him so many times. We want to let people, because there's only so much seating room there for people to enjoy it. Because how many times have you seen that whole outside wall with standing room only?
Oh, many, many. People are peeking through the windows. I mean, he usually packs them in on most nights.
Absolutely. So we've even given up our seats for people to enjoy them, because I think everybody should have that opportunity.
Oh, that's nice of you.
Well, that's going to be it. I can't take you two knuckleheads no more. You've given me way too many margaritas. My eyes are floating now. We're going to have to call a cab because we're responsible.
And we didn't even talk about the coffee Tequila, we found Bob.
That's another show. Another show,
coffee,
guys.
Tequila.
We need
coffee,
straight
tequila,
coffee right now, guys. So you got anything else you want to say, Bob? Everybody check out your site. Everybody go into All In WDW. Get ready for the Sweet 16, am I correct? And your food and flower and garden reviews.
Yeah, thanks, guys, for having me on yet again. I really do appreciate working with you guys. And, you know, it's always a blast to be on the show. You know, and I appreciate your listeners and, you know, their willingness to pay us a visit at allinwdw.com. Next poll up is favorite WDW attraction. That'll come up in, you know, a week or two. There's a little bit more food and garden coming. And then and some general dining review type stuff, short and sweet type stuff. So thanks again to you two. You know, the podcast is just phenomenal, and I'm proud to be part of your list of guests.
Oh, well, you got an open invitation, Bob. You're a friend of the show, and as long as you have that wonderful wife, you're always invited on the show because we love Mrs. All in WDW. She's one of our number one. She's in our top five fans.
Oh, well, great. She'll be happy to hear that.
So, go ahead, Dan.
No, I was just going to say we do, and likewise, we love having you on. Your expertise in food, and like I said on one of the little shows we did around World Showcase, your ability to pronounce a lot of these food items is very helpful to me, because half the time I can't even speak English, let alone Italian
you
or French.
You speak Boston, man. We forgive
yeah.
you.
Yeah, so it's very helpful, and you're very informative, so we enjoy having you on as well.
Well, thank you.
Your site is great, Bob. We love doing your polls. We love having you on. You're one of our best supporters. We appreciate everything you do for us. And thank you again. You did a wonderful job today. I want to reach out to everybody. Please go over to iTunes and give us a review. We'd really, really appreciate that. And also, our good friend Mike Iaconelli still has the Ike Foundation. He's going to be getting a Facebook page soon. So if you guys can head over to Ike Live or the Ike Foundation and help a kid out, help donate a fishing pole or a rod, a lure, anything, or just donate your time and take somebody fishing. We enjoy you guys. We appreciate you for listening, and have a great week, everybody. Have a great week, guys.
Talk to you next week.
Bye-bye.
Take care.
Bye.
Hello. Here we are again at our last marketplace for the day. We've made our way around the World Showcase Promenade, and we find ourselves over in the Mexico Pavilion. We just had at the Lotus House, when we're going to give you our post-eating review, if you will, because the recording conditions weren't right. So Bob here is going to tell you what we had and what we think of it.
All right. So we were at Lotus House, as Dennis mentioned. China was being really loud today, and China and Mexico both are being very crowded. So we ate and ran and lived to talk another day.
Yeah.
At Lotus House in China, we had the Kung Pao chicken bun, which I think is just phenomenal. It's highly recommended as far as I'm concerned. And we had the vegetable spring roll. See, you could have said those two.
Yes, I could have. This is probably the easiest pronunciations we've had of all the marketplaces today.
So and if I can, I'll make a mention. You know, we've been talking about some dishes today. If you guys want to see the pictures, go over to allinwdw.com. In the top right, there's a search box. Type the dish name and you should find the pictures. Otherwise, scroll through my posts. Pretty much in the last couple weeks, I've been all food and all in WDW style. So,
yes, yes.
So let's start with the vegetable spring roll. Dennis, it didn't make my pre-festival top 15, and the reason it didn't is a spring roll is a spring roll is a spring roll. And you can pretty much, if it's an ordinary type thing, it's not on my list. We did try them. They were good. I found them a little bit greasy. They were good. But I think we both came away thinking that we liked the sriracha mayo type sauce better than the spring roll.
Yeah, I mean, if it wasn't for the sauce, it would have been a real loser. And Bob's right. And we knew that going in. It was that they made it on my top 15 list pre-festival. Bob was nice enough to get that at the last minute. We had not planned on getting that, and I wish he wouldn't have been so kind, because they're just like any spring roll, like Bob said. you could get back home or in the frozen food section of your local supermarket. So disappointing. I mean, they were good. They were hot. There's nothing wrong with them. But there's so many other wonderful food items you can have here that I wouldn't waste your money or your appetite on something like that.
Now, the Kung Pao chicken bun.
Ooh.
Now, that was phenomenal. So at Food and Wine Festival, they have a dish on a steamed bun, a soft steam bun called Mongolian beef. We drizzle a little bit of sriracha on that, and that's actually won the Food and Wine Festival for me in the past. This Kung Pao chicken bun really delivered this year as far as dishes are concerned. The chicken was good, drizzled the sriracha over it. Dennis, you made the comment the bun was a little bit weird.
Yeah, and it's a steamed bun, as it's described, but if you've never experienced this, it's kind of like, it looks like it's still doughy or it's not cooked yet, and I guess that's what it is. They probably put the dough in a steamer of some sort, and that's what cooks it, but don't let that throw you off. It's very good. It's very, the buns we had today were very soft, and again, a good complement to the ingredients inside, so... A little weird looking, but worth it. Very, very tasty.
Very tasty. One of the favorite things I've had at the festival, you made a comment earlier about a destination dish. Mm. And in my mind, this is a dish that you're not going to find anywhere else, most likely. I have had steam buns back in Atlanta, where we primarily reside, but nothing like this. And it's certainly nothing we'll make at home. Other dishes that we liked at the festival, like the shrimp and grits, for instance, those are things that we could find a way to concoct in our own kitchen. Mm. I can't imagine making a steam bun. So I mean, the unique type thing.
Right.
This is going to be at or near the top of my list by the time all is said and done.
You know, it would be interesting to me if some of the other food items around the promenade here, if we threw them on a steam bun, if we would change our opinion. You know what I mean? Like some of the, I don't know specifically what, but is it the bun you think that makes it, or is it the, you know,
no,
it's the combination?
For me, it's the filling. And,
yeah.
Well, the bun's part of it, obviously, but for me, it was the filling and the sriracha.
Okay.
You know, to speak to that question you just raised, and it'd be kind of a meld of two worlds, but, you know, we had earlier the white corn arepa with a braised beef filling.
Correct.
I could imagine that on the steam bun.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if we were to have maybe not the shrimp and grits, but the shrimp with the andouille sausage,
right,
and the mixture on the steam bun, I could see that being tasty.
Yeah.
I mean, as Dennis says, don't be scared away by the bun. I did
right.
hear one guest earlier in the festival say, "Oh, geez, that was the weirdest bun I've ever seen in my life."
Right.
And even friends of mine have said that they won't try it because they can't get past
right.
the fact that the bun looks like it's a white uncooked bun.
Right.
When in actuality it is cooked.
Right.
So,
parboiled. We back home we have a thing parboiled. They do something with it, but it's similar. But yeah. Don't judge a book by its cover in this case. So do you think the manicotti would go good on the bun?
I don't think the manicotti goes good too much anywhere.
Kidding. I'm only kidding.
Actually, no, I should be fair. Italy, your manicotti was okay. It probably was better than anything Morocco served. And frankly, it might be better than two-thirds of what the smokehouse served.
All right. Well, it's been awesome spending some time with you at this year's festival. And
thanks for having me.
Oh, always. And I wish we could do more, but we can only eat so much. And I got to get on with my family vacation here, but like I said, always fun to spend some time with you when we're down here, and thanks for helping us out.
No, look forward to it. Thank you again. Pictures on allinwdw.com. Please stop by, have a look. Just to give everybody a preview, if I could be so bold, within the next week or so, we're going to go on to the fourth phase of our attraction competition. We're going to be handling the Magic Kingdom.
Nice.
A tournament culminating, going into Final Four NCAA basketball weekend with the All Walt Disney World Favorite Attraction poll.
Awesome. All right, we're out from the World Showcase. See you later. Bye-bye.
Sure. Well, guys, that's going to be it. Me and Den's going to hop off our stools, pay our tab, and get on out of here. This show is brought to you by our fine sponsors, American Tourist Travel. For all your travel needs, contact American Tourist Travel at 856-227-9200. If you need a nice home in the Central Florida area to go visit Disney, Universal, or any of the fine amusement parks, and you want to stay outside the parks, contact the Elite Vacation Homes at 888-510-6679. They have a home to fit any size family. If you need a scooter in the Central Florida area, contact Scooter Vacations at 855-939-7266. And if you want to rent a vacation club on Disney property, contact David's Vacation Club Rentals at 800-610-5791. And you can also find all of our fine sponsors at our website at www.magicalmainstreetmemories.com. And please, guys, go give us a review over on iTunes. That's going to be it. Thanks again, and thanks for listening. We will see you next time. Bye-bye.